welcome to Disability Empowerment Now, Ridge to Season 4. I'm your host, Keith Murphy Dickensini, and today I'm talking with my dear friend and former collaborator, Alex Perry. Alex, welcome to the show.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy to be on this side of the microphone, but thanks for having me.
Well, it feels like we haven't talked in 5 years, and it feels like we started the journey together in 10. I cannot believe how short a time it has been. So I would refer to you by our mutual friend, Rox, who was referred to me by the head of the journalism college or program. And we were referred by then the dean, J.P. Martin. And so that's how the dynamos got set up. If I was interviewing Rox, I would be like, why Alex? And why did you leave? That would be the quickest interview, and also pretty boring, because I know what she would say of the bad. I loved you in very capable hands. You did need me. So that's what she would say.
Yes.
Tell me about everything behind the scenes that I did not know about in terms of audio mastering, editing, graphic creation, transcripts. I mean, before you introduced me to the two other team members, which we'll get to in just a second, you literally did it everything. I gave you the moniker creative powerhouse, because it was literally just you, me, and Eric, and then he stepped away for health reasons, and so it was you and me, and I was just free-flowing, learning to do interviews while you did everything else. Tell me about that experience.
Oh my gosh, well, I could talk for days about it. So you have to stop me if I go for too long, because I am a chatty Cathy. That's the nature of a journalist. But I guess
really?
I'll say that my...
I never knew that about you.
So surprising, I know. Such a trait about me. But anyways, so I guess a little bit about the backstory of coming to the project was, Rux came to me and she said, I have this, you know, opportunity for you. And I think that it's something that really aligns with your values and things that you love to do. And I was like, okay, yeah. And I originally, it was funny too, the backstory is that Rux had brought me on because you wanted to learn audio editing. And then,
and then I took some YouTube full-length courses, like 3 hours, and they bored me to tears.
Yeah.
I was crying so hard. The people who were doing them were fantastic.
It exactly.
Was just like, no. And so if we didn't have the second meeting where we were in my office and you were showing me the graphics you had been doing for your podcast, I forget the name, that's not really important. I found a new way to utilize your talents that wouldn't be us sitting in front of a computer or two computers and me trying to figure out how to do this whole shebang by myself. But please continue.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. So I was originally brought on for that, right? At audio editing, which I love, and I can understand audio editing. I mean, this is why you have people like me, right, to pay to do this stuff, is that I love that nerdy part of it where you get down into the nitty-gritty and you tell stories through audio, oral histories, I guess you should say. And you obviously saw something in me, and I love that when you tell that story. I do have a lot of different skills. I have audio editing, I've got graphic design, script writing, producing, editing, reporting. I come from a journalism and a religious studies background. And what I felt like this podcast did when you.
Whoa, whoa, hold on. Please tell me more about that, because I mean, we may go over, but I want to understand that linkage because I never hear those two things together.
Never. Yeah, no, that is true. I guess I never really thought about it until now, but it is journalism, I feel like, is so community oriented. You're telling the stories for people. It's a skill, and I think it's a service to society as well. And religious studies was that part of me that I yearn to understand, and I yearn to learn about other people because I myself am not religious, but I can empathize with people on their worldviews. And I think you can understand a lot of different groups of people because you understand where they come from, what their culture is. And so they're both actually very community oriented if you think about it. And so that was my background was and way back when I was like, I'm gonna be a journalist that goes and reports on the Vatican. I'm gonna do all this other stuff, right? And that's actually not how I turned out to be. I ended up doing my master's thesis on psychedelics in Tucson and kind of the cultural implications of that movement within Tucson, and the scientific implications of that. So my journey is a little odd, but at the same time, I think at the heart of it is being community oriented. And my backstory, the community part for me is super important because I feel like it's a service to society to uplift communities and to tell their stories. And this project allowed me to do that, not only creatively, but also personally, because I feel like, Keith, this podcast taught me so much about the disability community because I am personally able-bodied, right? And I think there's a lot of privilege that comes with that in that worldview is things that we don't think about often as an able-bodied person. And so you allowed me to blossom not only creatively, and you trusted me with your baby, your project, right? Disability Empowerment Now. I'm wearing my old t-shirt for everybody listening, the first t-shirt that ever came out, right? But it also allowed me to learn from a community at the same time. And I'm a lifelong learner. That's the biggest thing for me. I'm doing another master's right now because I love learning about people from all different backgrounds. And I also think too that this project, which I thought was so important, was there was nothing else like it on the market. I personally felt like at the time what I was looking into. And I thought that this was something that people needed to have, and this was going to fill a need in the audio space that was not already filled. And Keith, you were the perfect person to do that. And so it was fun, though, those early days. It's like kind of, I was thinking about it today. Thinking about your questions and preparing for this interview, it kind of felt like a tech startup. Like in the beginning, we were just like throwing out ideas and branding and laying the groundwork, right? And you really brought together the messaging, and you were teaching me so much about where you wanted the project to go. And so I built the project and the team with your ideals in mind, but also I just brought that creative element to it.
So I almost shut it down after season one because I wasn't sure if I could do
Yes.
another season. But
It's a lot of
season
work.
two and every other season, I'd start with a overarching theme, and
Yes.
it has required me to build narrative arcs of the entire season.
Yes.
And they're long seasons, as you know. Season one was half the length of seasons now because
Right.
started
Well, you get
with
so many good guests. You get
one,
amazing guests.
it's caught, but you're right. We needed help either at the end of season one or at the beginning of season two or in between the seasons. You're a journalist and reporter by trade, and you introduced me to two of my colleagues who are still my colleagues, and I called and begged them, plead with them to stay on for as long as they can. Why did you choose Pascal and Nicole specifically out of the myriads and myriads of capable colleagues and friends that you know? Why them?
Great question. Well, I think that with this project, and something that you really showed me too, is that with a project like this, trust is super important, especially when you're building up a team. And I honestly went with my gut and with my intuition, and I wanted to bring people in I knew had the skills and also the excitement to get things done. I find a lot in journalism and communications that young people, we are typically shunned or discredited because we have so much to bring to the table in terms of compassion that we're considered naive, right? The people just don't take what we're saying as something that should be included in reporting or coverage, right? And so I think this was the opportunity for me to bring in young people who care about this topic, who are very much compassionate about this topic and want to bring their skills to the table so that people within the disabled community from all different walks of life can have a voice and can tell their story, right? And I think another part of it too is we were very much interested in telling stories in a way that was not one-dimensional. I really find that, especially with Nicole and Pascal, that we knew in traditional media coverage that disability was, and you know this, Keith, but for people listening, was covered as like it's an inspiration, right? Like this person just existing is an inspiration to us. And I don't think that's, I feel like that's a very vapid and one-dimensional way of looking at the lives of people who have disabilities. Like, yes, of course, that's a part of their personality, but they are also multi-level, multifaceted people that bring so many things to the table, and they want to share their stories, right? And so I think that Nicole and Pascal shared that view with me as well. And so I knew with specifically Nicole coming in that we needed social media because obviously in this day and age, I think that marketing, you have to include social media as an aspect to building up a brand. So she came in, she had a lot of fire, a lot of spunk, so she brought that with her. And then I knew also that we needed a creative producer, someone with a lot of experience in the local community in Tucson. And I immediately thought of Pascal because they have so much experience, and Pascal also has a relationship with the deaf community and other underrepresented communities here in Tucson. And so I knew we wanted to, I wanted to include them as well. Because it's important to have people working within the sphere that are from different backgrounds. We can't all be from a similar background because everybody needs to come with their own experiences, their own angles. Because, I mean, we all know that diversity on a team makes a project better. So.
So you had to leave after season two because you were pursuing another master's. You got a job that easily dropped what I paid you on
I don't know about
everything.
that, but.
Well, and so we started as a three-piece, and I was in New York, and Nicole called me twice And she never called me at that point. And I would always like, "Are you okay? Are you okay? I know it's really hot there, but you never call me." "Oh yeah, I'm fine. I'm chilling. I've got these great new team members." And she basically did the interview for me. And then the team grew and grew to about eight, and I'm bringing on a co-host or co-hosts, I don't know
Oh,
which,
that's so exciting.
but the point is, it all started with you and your ingenious move to build this team. There's a old saying that it's not what you know, it's who you know. It's the people that you brought me that hogged in almost everyone else. I talk to Pascal on a weekly basis. I talk to Nicole on a weekly basis. I send Pascal jokes, celebrity death list when I'm
Yes.
angry as all hell, and I just want to make him laugh because what else do you do when you're angry? But it all started with one person, actually two, and then three, but it was literally just the two of us. Eric set up the equipment, put me on his podcast for two
Right.
episodes, and then he stepped away after a few episodes, I believe after episode three, and then it was George Arts. And then I leaned heavily on you because I had no idea what I was doing, and some could say I still don't. But the team grew and grew because you chose the right people, and the interviews almost didn't need to happen. Like, Nicole interviewed her friends for me, and the interviews were irrelevant, but that trend started with you. And so I will always be deeply in your debt, creatively, professionally, personally, because yes, I did trust you with this idea that I honestly didn't think would go on after episode
I thought it would go
three.
somewhere.
Well, you did. You saw it, and I think the people around me saw it clearer than I did. How I talk about it is I've always had the innate curiosity about interviewing people, and I just wrapped a interview with Kat Stafford and her partner,
Oh,
Heath
great.
Buttram, which is a couple I really need to introduce you to. You
I know,
guys
I love
are
Kat.
a
Love that interview.
blast. And that interview was just a comedy hour. And how we ended, we teased the next season and the part three of the trilogy. But before I took risks like that, I had no idea that I could be gutsy like women are and really do things
Right.
like that. But it doesn't surprise me at all that you, Pascal, Nicole, My parents, oddly enough, saw the bigger picture way
Yes.
longer than I did. I was just getting through episode after episode, and people asked me, "Do you ever listen to your own episodes?" And I'm like, "I should. I don't because I have instant recall. I mean, I can
Exactly.
remember Jovan's episode, which was the first one, like
Oh my
I
gosh.
shot
Yeah.
it last month, and this was 2, 2.5 years ago.
Yep.
I
I
think."
love that episode. That is one of my, obviously it's the first, so of course
Yeah.
it holds a special place in my heart, but I think that is one of the ones that where I feel like when I think about that one, it was incredibly eye-opening to me because it, in a lot of ways, checked me so hard on the privileges that I have as an able-bodied person because he went on to talk about how just simply not having a driver's license
Yeah.
was a problem for employers. And that put me on a trajectory through disability empowerment now that still holds to this day where accessibility is the first thing I think about when I'm doing any sort of content creation, any sort of reporting, any sort of website development, since that's a part of my job right now as well, is I'm always asking myself, how can we make this more accessible,
Yeah.
so that everybody feels reflected in the content that we're creating? And I'm so glad that it's all start for me, it all started here, in disability
Yeah.
empowerment now.
Two episodes more in season one. Of course, I love that season as a
Yeah.
whole, but the two other episodes that I think really checked me as a host, as a male, as someone with male privilege, because let's be real, that's a real thing and it
That's right.
always has been. It wasn't until I interviewed then House Rep Jennifer Longden
Oh
and
my God,
she
yeah.
dropped
The bomb of all bombs.
the bombshells, multiple bombshells, very early on in that episode. And I remember I had done a lot of research on
Right,
every
yep.
position, and it was like once I got my breath back and every question went out the
I know.
window, and
Yep.
I'm like, how do I continue? How do I continue? How do I
Yeah. And
continue?
that's such a great exercise for you though as a host is like sometimes people are just gonna are really just gonna drop bombs and you have to be on your toes and learn from that and just be ready and be ready
Yeah,
for it.
and I texted her afterwards and I said, look, that was a heavy personal episode. A, did you mean to do that? And B, do you want me to release it? Should we re-record? And she was like, no, I wasn't planning on doing that. But yeah, release it because it's important. And I'm like, okay. Eric was the producer at the time. He had to edit it 3 separate times, and he said, this is a really tough interview to edit, but this interview alone is why you need to keep
Going.
doing
Yeah.
this podcast. And so when we got to Kat's episode and her similar revelation that I knew was coming,
Yes.
I was able to handle it. But had Jennifer not thrown me full body into the icy water ever from a helicopter drop
Exactly.
to use that
Play.
strange metaphor, I would not have been able to approach that. So, I mean, I'm just echoing your what you just said about you have to be ready for any and everything. And the reason why I'm talking about those episodes is I'm going to try to get them back to really lead up to season four
Love
as
that.
I introduce the co-hosts later on. And so those interviews, and that was almost half of the season at that point.
Right.
But could,
Yeah.
and so we talked about season one. How was season two as a narrative experience? Because it was on disability, arts, culture, and faith. And it was double the size of season one. And I had the crazy idea that no one talked me out of, by the way. I kept hoping that someone would talk me out of releasing season one and season two all in the first year. And so now
Right.
when I do 30 episode seasons, I'm like, this feels very natural
Yeah.
to me. But before I let you go, talk about double the workload, double the gas, double every possible thing, merchandise, group photos, pamphlets, promotion, all of that before you'd signed off and left it in very capable hands of
Good.
Pascal and Nicole.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on a lot of the things we did there. But man, it was a whirlwind. I felt like season one was like the warm-up, right? We were like, okay, what curveballs are gonna be thrown our way?
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, we were like, okay, let's see what's gonna happen. What are the curveballs? You know, what is social media gonna be like? What's everything gonna look like? In season two, I really felt like, even though it was more work, I actually felt like we were getting into a rhythm of what the show was gonna be like, what it was gonna look like, what the workflow was. And we started to think broader about some more things we can incorporate. And that is a really great season two. Because of course we had that faith portion, right, which goes right back to my religious studies background. And I really loved that incorporation of religion. And I think it too, that season emphasized what brought me into the project, right, is showing that multifaceted way that that the disability community exists, you know, all over the world. They're doing so many amazing things, and they may not be getting the coverage that they deserve, right? And so we are providing that. We provided that type of coverage. So I never thought to myself, this is too much. I just thought, this is what it is. You know, this is what we're going to be doing, and this is like what the pattern is we're going to set. And that season, let me see, what was the other part of that? Yeah, I do think that season was all about broadening what we wanted to do. What was the next best thing we were gonna go with? And I didn't stop you when you wanted to get crazy with the amount of episodes we were doing, because I felt like it was a service. We were doing a service to the community, and we should put as many episodes as we possibly can out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm frankly stunned and tickle pink every time the team that I work with, and I brag about them so much
Good.
because they're They're all people who are able to do a podcast and audio master and create graphics and do it as a one-stop shop.
Right.
That was never my goal, even with we had that ill-fated Adobe Audition workshop, and ill-fated is the very appropriate word. It because had we done that, I would have tinkered around with it, gotten frustrated with the amount of mastering while also doing the interviews. And so we would have been right back where we ended up with me kicking it to Eric and then you and then Pascal and Nicole. I always viewed this as a very collaborative project. I've won awards for it, which
Amen.
makes me very grateful because it shows you the momentum that's building. In season three, I've been tickled pink. Again, that's a weird phrase to use. That most of the guests were very willing and able to do video interviews as well as podcast interviews. So Pascal runs our YouTube channel. Oh, by the way, you had at the very beginning told me you need to register the YouTube handle and just keep it. And at that time, I was like, what? We're never going to use YouTube. Never. I mean, this is a podcast. How
Exactly,
do you
right?
put a podcast on YouTube? But I did what you said, and before you showed me Instagram, I thought it was just a fad that was on its way out. I
Right.
hope Nicole doesn't smash
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
She's like, what? Switch up.
totally what she'll do. Can't you imagine? But no, all of these ideas came from the Nucleus team and then me saving the org website of Disability Empowerment Now, and that getting ready to launch probably in winter of this year or spring of next year. It's
So
all
exciting.
about the building blocks that you can place as early on with me saving
Well,
the YouTube handle
thank
to me a
you.
year later, claiming the org URL of the podcast name. And so again, I have nothing but respect for you, nothing but
Thank you.
good memories of working with you. We needed help. You brought in the best people in the business, in my humble estimation, of my humble opinion. I'm not sure how my lead producer will feel about that. But anyway,
No,
I
everybody's great.
owe it all to You particularly because you set the ball rolling. You took someone who was very inexperienced, insecure in just doing the episodes. I mean, I would have to take a nap after doing
Yes.
episodes. And back then, I was doing one a week. Now I
Yes.
can do two or three a week, no problem. I
That's
don't
awesome.
know how I went through that growth spurt. I definitely couldn't have imagined it at all. But you, going back to what Rox did say to me and would say if I
No.
had interviewed her, she did leave me in the best, most capable hands ever, and you decided that we needed more capable hands. And now the team has grown to literally double its length in not even 4 years. And I
Oh,
just
that's great.
marvel at that creativity. Everyone who works on this project brings their own flavor, their own ideas. I love. I was talking to my dad last night, and I said, I love that Pascal and I are the only men on the
Yes.
team, and we're surrounded by really
Well, you.
capable, badass women who actually steer the ship where it needs to go. No offense to Pascal or me, but I mean, we're very outnumbered in the
Right.
team meetings that we
Well,
do.
even then, Pascal is, someone who identifies as they them, right? So you
Yeah.
also have that perspective as well,
Yes,
of someone
absolutely.
from that community who can bring a voice, right, to the
It's
organization and the podcast.
that's very important that you brought that up. So really, I'm the only one who is,
You are the only man.
yeah, I am the only man, but until the most recent members came on, I
Right,
was
right.
the only outwardly disabled member, and that
Right.
was my claim to fame, because without the voids,
Right.
you would have no idea, unless you were a doctor, physical therapist, whatever, that
Right.
I was disabled. And so, but I'm so glad that I'm finally not the only one who's disabled. Not that I ever minded that in the beginning, but it's about getting as many diverse perspectives. I mean, the podcast and now the video cast, which will launch season 4 in September. We seem to like that month for whatever reason.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, September reminds me.
And what I try to do is offer a very broad smorgasbord of disability across every lifespan. So yeah, wrapping up before that audio glitch happened, what I've always tried to bring to the podcast, the overall mission, it's showing the fact that Invincibility does touch every span, every financial bracket. It doesn't matter if you're famous or not famous. It doesn't matter if you were born with disabilities or you acquired them later in life. It doesn't matter. And so that's why I like the longer series arcs or season arcs, because it allows me to paint that picture. And that's what I go in to each season, and how I create each season and make it bigger and bigger than the last one. I was
I
talking to
love
a
it.
friend the other night, and I said, "You two said, the band, you two said, when creating their 1990 masterpiece, Octane Baby, which is German for attention." So, Attention Baby, that's language title. How they created that album was they had to chop down their previous masterpiece, their magnum opus, the Joshua Tree, and clean up all over again. And so that's the creative process that I imbue with each season. And again, to circle back to you and your creative badassery, none of this would be possible. And so, again, you have my deepest respect. And if you need
Thank
anything,
you.
you know I'm there for you in a pinch, because you literally created the building blocks of this platform. And the bigger and bigger it gets, it all points back to you. And so I am eternally grateful, both personally and professionally, my friend.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that, Keith. I agree. Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to work on this. I mean, it's a part of, I just love thinking that it's a part of my legacy. It's really weird to think about me being like the very outset, in the middle of all this as the creative origins, but I guess that is the truth, and I appreciate the opportunity to have worked with you on this. On this project, and I love seeing it grow. I mean, that's my favorite part, right? Me and Pascal are still roommates, right? So I get to see it grow. I get to see the progression of the project, and it just gets bigger and better.
You have been listening to Disability Empowerment Now. I would like to thank my guests, you, our listener, and the Disability Empowerment team that made this episode possible. More information about the podcast can be found at disabilityempowermentnow.com or on our social media at Disability Empowerment Now. The podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts or on the official website. Don't forget to rate, comment, and share the podcast. This episode of Disability Empowerment Now is copyrighted 2024.